Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I'm really excited today to bring you my new friend, author Peter Serko. If you live on Vashon Island, you probably already know about Peter. He has been a technology manager at the high school, but he's also gone on to be a photographer, a playwright, a theater director, an actor, as well as being an AIDS activist and continuing to put on events to bring local awareness to AIDS. I mean, if you had any question that you could become more creative after 50, just look at Peter, because he is totally amazing. And as I understand it, Peter, and thank you so much for being here, it's like you don't let it stop you. If you don't know how to do something, you figure it out and you go ahead.
Yeah, that's sort of my way of operating. Yeah, it's the long way often to get where you got to go. But I get there eventually.
Well, it's amazing. And congratulations on your book, your first novel, Hattie's War, because that's a big mountain to climb, to go from, you know, I'm sure you've written before, but to go from, go into your first book, I know firsthand, is a big deal. And you did it. And it's a lovely book. It reads really well. It's gotten great reviews. And yay, that's what we're going to talk about today.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So when we were talking in the fall, it was right on the eve of Vashon World AIDS Day. And we talked about your relationship to your brother, who had died of AIDS and had been a very important activist in the early days of AIDS. He'd worked with ACT UP. And you had kind of picked up the torch to honor his memory by continuing the activist work and also documenting who he was in a way that could both honor his story, but also tell the story of AIDS, lest it be forgotten. So we talked about that, and I was so moved by your commitment to your family, your commitment to your brother David. And then I picked up Hattie's War, your book, and that has another kind of commitment to family, but totally different, because you're talking about a fictionalized story of the life of your great-great-grandmother. Is that right?
Correct. Yep. Harriet Howell Phelps. Yes.
Wow. So how did you get inspired? I mean, is this family thing a theme for you? Because it's interesting that you did a deep dive into David's life and then a deep dive into the history around your great-great-great-grandmother.
Well, I was I've always really been interested in kind of my family. I'm the collector of family photographs and family stories. And I was fortunate when I was born that I had a whole bunch of grandparents. I had, you know, grandparents on either side. I had great grandparents and some of them that I knew. So so I was around, you know, older generations, and I was just kind of fascinated by some of their lives. And But I actually didn't know a heck of a lot. This is my mother's side of the family. Hattie's on my mother's side of the family. My dad's side of the family came from the old country, from the Carpathian Mountains, which is either depends on where you draw the lines in history, but it's basically the Ukraine and Slovakia and so on. That's where my dad's family came. And it's pretty hard to do any kind of investigation of your family background, back in the old country. It's just very difficult. Here, not so difficult. And my mother's side of the family has been around forever. I have two 11th great grandfathers. So 11, that means 11 greats, who were on the Mayflower.
Oh my goodness.
And I only learned that about a year or so ago, and I thought, wow, isn't that cool? And then I read that 35 million people are related to the first people who were on the Mayflower.
Not that original.
But anyway, the story of Hattie's War really goes back to when I was in high school. When I was in high school, my family took a trip to Gettysburg. I grew up in upstate New York, which is about 4 hours from Gettysburg, down in Pennsylvania. And on our way there, my mother said, we had a family member who fought and died at Gettysburg, and his name was Howell. But that's all she knew. She didn't know who he was, what his relationship was. So we went there, and I was very moved by it. I mean, I'm a sophomore in high school, and I just never forgot that name, Howell. And about 15 years ago, I acquired the diaries of my great grandmother, Maud Phelps. This is my mother's grandmother, and they were farmers up in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. And she was a meticulous record keeper, and I knew her because she died when I was in college. So, I just became very interested in my mom's side of the family after reading these diaries. They were nothing personal, really, and they're just like what they did, what the life of a farmer was. And so I just began investigating my family background. I found the name Howell, and I found that Hannibal Howell, my third great grandfather, fought and died at Gettysburg and died on July 1st, 1863. So that kind of set the whole thing in motion. Pulling the pieces of his story together, and so that's kind of how it started, is just with looking back into my family genealogy.
Ah, oh, so interesting. Well, I realize before I jump in and ask you about that process of writing and how it developed and how your family reacted to it, give us a synopsis of the book because I realize listeners aren't going to know it, and I want people to know what we're talking about because it's a multifaceted book. You have this beautiful portrait of the young Hattie, who is this charming girl who sweeps us into her story, and we feel our hearts going with her,
Right,
and you have
right.
the background of her discoveries about the Civil War, which is a part of history that we all kind of know about, but really know so little bit about. And then more. There's other stuff in the background. So give me your own synopsis.
Well, first of all, I wanted to write a book that told about my family and told something about the Civil War. That you would read and you would learn a little bit about the Civil War, and particularly the period after the Civil War, what it was like for people who survived. And so Hattie is a young gal, a family who's been orphaned. Her dad has died. She's from a family of five. She is the youngest child of Hannibal and Charlotte. And she the how I started to tell this story. I should kind of give you a little bit more background before I go on and tell you that. After I learned about Hannibal, my great 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 grandfather, I thought, okay, I want to write something about this because he joined with his two brothers. There's three brothers that joined together. Only one brother survived the war, and that's his brother Byron. So it was Hannibal who's the oldest in his family, of first of 13 children. And his younger brother Tapin, who was 17, and his brother Byron, they enlisted together. And I thought, that's very interesting to me. And only one brother survives the war, and that is Byron. Tapin is killed at the Battle of South Mountain in April of 1862, and then Hannibal dies in 1861. Byron got sick 6 months into his service and was sent home. He had typhus and pneumonia and almost died and had lifelong health problems. So I thought, oh, this is a great story. I'd love to tell somebody, but I learned that there's been 60,000 books written about the Civil War. What was I going to add? Until one day I was just looking back over my notes, and I noticed that Hattie, the youngest child, was born 5 months after her dad left home. She never knew her father. She was one and a half when he died. He probably never saw her. And a light bulb went on. I thought, I'll tell the story through Hattie's, the daughter who never knew her father, and give her the challenge of she's wanting to find out about her father. And she's very spirited young gal, artistically inclined, loves to draw, like her father. Her father was a sign painter, which is true. Hannibal and his brothers had a sign painting business. They painted signs and they painted carriages before the war. And so I saw him as an artist at heart. That's kind of the vision I had of him. And so she wants to be an artist like her dad, and she wants to find out about him. She doesn't know anything. She's never even seen a picture of him. She has no idea what he looks like. This is 1878. This is when it's all happening, and she's 14 years old. She knows nothing about the war. She has no understanding of what war is, and she is in a family that her mother is having to survive and take this family. Her sister Jenny dies 8 years after her father dies. We don't know why, probably the measles or something like that. And so her sister dies and kind of throws her into a dire downward spiral, and she becomes very depressed. So depressed that there's a risk of her being sent to an insane asylum.
Now, is this part of your creation, or did you know that from history?
No, this is part of my creation. That's not true. There's no truth to that, as far as I know. As far as I know.
The part I'm just going to signal as you go on with your story, signal for readers though, because I think it's really important, is if someone said to me, "Do you want to read a story about the Civil War?" Frankly, in this day and age where we're sort of in a mess culturally, I look for things that are going to be a little uplifting. And the Civil War is not uplifting. It's
That's for
very,
sure.
very difficult. So I noticed as I was reading your book that you were walking this balance that was really quite lovely between introducing us to this girl that we fall in love with that is young and charming and troubled and at risk, of the depression that you write about, and terrified that she's going to be sent to an insane asylum. And we can relate to her, and then we begin to learn through her correspondence with her uncle about the Civil War. So you've sort of set us up with this very humane place and engagement, and now you can give us a little medicine.
They begin a correspondence. They correspond back and forth, and Byron began. She Daddy says, "I want to know about my father. I want you to tell me. I want to hear the truth." And over a period of time, Byron becomes more graphic in his descriptions of what happened, and it disturbs Hattie. She says, "I want to hear the truth," but the truth really is shocking to her, and she's not dealing with it. She has really terrible dreams and so on. And so Byron kind of leads her through this, and eventually Hattie learns that she's helping Byron. Byron is suffering from PTSD in the war, and she, by telling her these stories, he's helping, he's being helped by her. So it's a kind of a little sweet little twist in there.
And when
And those
you.
letters are real. Those are not his letters, but those are, I used a lot of
Interesting.
firsthand accounts that I read in other places in my research. So a lot of those little tidbits in some of those stories, walking through the valley where there'd been a battle, a week before, and there's dead horses and there's dead bodies laying around, and they're just gasping because the stench is, that's a real story. Or sleeping among, pulling bodies to as cover, and sleeping the night between a bunch of bodies. That's a real story, that I read from firsthand accounts. So I tried to I embellished some of them, and but I pulled those together. The poem that's in part of the story towards the end is just a story that a poem that I wrote, but I used firsthand accounts, of some of those lines.
And you
So I
probably had to decide how graphic you wanted to be, because
yes.
the weight of that, it made me think about all the stuff that we don't know about war, and we don't know about World War One, and we don't know about the stuff of war that is actually, it's not conceptual, it's so physical, it's so awful.
Right. Yeah. No war is good. The Civil War was just very, very brutal, and just very difficult circumstances, and more As many people died by from disease has died on the battlefield. So there was that whole part of it as well.
That's
So
incredible.
yeah, I was so I want I use the letters to convey real stories about the war. And that's the vehicle that I wanted to use. Yeah, so it was an interesting way of doing it. And I what I did was Byron was discharged 6 months into his service before he saw and they saw any action. They were in Washington, D.C. for about 6 months. The Army of the Potomac was surrounding the Capitol because they feared that the Confederates were going to invade Washington. So they put a lot of troops there. And so the Howell brothers spent about 6 months just, in Washington, D.C. And I have letters written by Hannibal during that time. That's the other kind of crazy thing that happened. When I started this, I had this fantasy that maybe I would find some letters, of his and just through complete serendipity, I found out my cousin, who I hadn't seen in 50 years, had some letters that Hannibal had written during the war. And subsequently to writing the book, I've actually been in touch with some Howells who read the book, who read a story in a newspaper about the
Wow.
book, and they sent me letters. So I have letters written by Tappan, the youngest one, as well.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's been yeah, and those things are all happened after that. That happened after the book came out. So
How long did it how long did you spend researching this before you started writing?
well, I would technically I would say my research started back when I got those diaries from my great grandmother and just started reading those and then reading about the Civil War. Once I found out about who Hannibal was, I started reading about the Civil War, and I read one of the most influential books for me was this one called This Republic of Suffering. And it's about death and grieving. And it just helped me so much to kind of understand what the attitudes were towards death during that time. This whole concept during that era of a good death was being surrounded by your family and making amends, having last words. That was very, very important in the culture. That the Civil War completely upended that. And people were like really worried, if my loved one has died in the battle, are they going to be in heaven because they didn't have this good death? And so I introduced that idea right early on when Hattie's talking about, her mother says, I pray he had a good death. And so I just drop all these little tidbits throughout the story purposefully to just kind of illustrate what it was like then, and the fact that there were pensions, and they gave $8. Charlotte got $8 a month and $2 for each of the kids. So she that's when pensions were created. By the turn of the century, there was the I think over half of the federal budget was pensions for Civil War veterans. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's a
There's so
fascinating the
many
Civil
threads
War.
here.
Yeah.
So
Well,
many
the
threads.
Civil War is really fascinating. I mean, I it's been great. I knew a little bit about the Civil War, and I don't know a whole heck of a lot now, but I know a lot more than I used to, and it's just very fat. People are still writing about it today. It's just still being studied and written about. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And side note, we probably don't have time to go into it, but I was just thinking, there's so much divisiveness in our country today. And there is still a sort of North-South divide. You
Oh,
know, there's
yes.
still a place where the Civil War has not healed. There's still a place where we may have freed the slaves, but we didn't heal
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
slavery. So, you know, going back into the Civil War, it's kind of interesting, like if you could go back in and then understand all the different threads that came out of it. Would you
Sure.
have a different view even on what's happening today?
It's Yeah, it is fascinating. So yeah, I've actually read a bunch of more things.
Oh my gosh.
Since then. So The Demon
So,
of Unrest is a great current book by Eric Larson. Really
oh,
good
okay.
historical fiction about it's about Fort
Right.
Sumter, the beginning of the war.
Wow.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Oh my
Anyway.
goodness. Your book, well, I have several questions. Your book reads really well, and one of the things that I enjoyed about it is that I read it and I thought, in a very positive way, this would work for young readers, because it's the chapters are short, there's lots of dialogue, the action moves really nicely. So you're not feeling like you're reading a tome of history about the Civil War. It's a novel, and and I think it would be accessible to people at many different ages. Were you thinking about, the high schoolers that you had
Yes,
worked with?
that's the target audience.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Although most of my readers are adults,
Yeah.
yeah, my target audience was young people. That was what I kind of started out with, right from the get-go. That's why I wanted to put all these details about the war, and that's why the nonfiction sections in the back, where you have a little more detail about some of these things that I mentioned.
Right,
Throughout the
right.
story. So yeah, no, I did that. And but I didn't know how to write for that. I learned while I was doing what you need to do to write for that kind of audience. And so I really had to educate myself about what who I was writing for, because I've never done that. I've never written anything like this.
So tell me
So
about that story, because that's pretty awesome. I know from writing my book, and I'm also coaching authors, and I often people start out with, I'm going to do a book, I've got this thing I want to share, I've got this manuscript done and all, but I go, wow, that's good. That's stage one. Congratulations, because there's going to be a lot more work that call is called, editing, and then, getting your structure straight, and then refining, and on and on and on. It's a lot of work. Can you describe your process a little bit?
sure. It took me 2 years to do it. I wrote it pretty much during COVID. That's kind of when it all happened. And I'm not a much of a planner, and I'm not like an outline kind of guy. So, although I did write what I would describe as an outline for this that I didn't really follow, but I did that. And I just started writing. I started writing the letters. That's what I started with. I just started writing letters back and forth between the two of them. And I had about 10 letters. And then I decided, what am I going to, how am I going to connect to these ideas? And I'd already had the idea about the very beginning of the book of how I wanted Hattie. There's a romance. There's this love story also
Yes,
that
it's
we haven't
totally
really talked
sweet.
about.
No,
Yeah,
I love
and this is
that.
these are my gr great great grandparents, so I wanted to tell their story as well. And so I had to figure out a way of how am I going to get these two together? And the idea I came up with is that, this little incident that happens at school between the two of them. So I had that in place. And so it kind of went, I just started writing from there. And I hired a professional after I would consider the first draft done. I hired a professional editor, and she was super helpful because I really didn't know what I was doing. I really don't know what I was doing. I mean, I'm just terrible with grammar and all those sorts of things, the things that you need to have kind of together a little bit. And so after she had it, I got it back, and I just immediately, I took people's input. I asked friends of mine. I had a number of friends of mine who I really trust and respect. Read it for me. I had middle school students. I had a group of middle school students, and Bridget Simmons, the gal who did the audiobook for me, was one of my beta readers when she was in sixth grade. She's in ninth grade now. I took all feedback super seriously, and so I did a revision after Jessica gave me that stuff, and then later on, I hired another editor, Becky, and Becky was just super helpful, and she gave me back the manuscript with her edits on it. And I think I added about 10,000 words after that, and within like 4 or 5 days, and I sent it back to her, and she said, "I've never had anybody do this much changes in a book manuscript ever." And I just was totally on fire, and I added things, I expanded things. Anyway, it just clicked. That part of it, I have to say, that revision part of it was the best part of the whole. Yeah, I really, for some reason, I just these ideas I had, I was able to follow through. Like, if I had to solve a problem, how am I going to get these people together? What am I going to do? Like the fortune teller, I came up with that way far into the book. The whole fortune teller thing, that whole thing kind of came together because I began to read about, again, try to educate myself about what you got to do to write for young people. And you got to keep the action moving. You got to make sure that at the end of every chapter, there's some rising tension. There's a little bit of tension there to keep the reader from going to the next thing. So I went back and I looked
Absolutely.
at the end of every chapter and said, like, how did I end this? And I just went back and I just kind of tweaked the ending of the, for example, in the first chapter, when Arthur, she gives Arthur the cookies and he walks
The
back
way
across
that
the room.
husband to be, but we don't know that.
Arthur, he walks back across the classroom. The part I added right at the end was she followed, her eyes follow him across the room, and she all of a sudden she feels this thing inside her that's kind of this love, this attraction to him, and it surprises her how she feels about him. I added that right, I added that, and that really kind of set the course of ramping up their romance, which was another note I had from my editor. So I the whole thing was great. I loved the whole thing. Laying it out was a lot of work. I mean, I did everything. I designed the cover. I did the layout. I pulled together all the graphics that are part of it. It was a lot of work. That part was just a lot of work, which is not as much fun, but the writing was great. Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing. There's a whole backstory of what it takes to quote produce a book with it. So even something like a cover, even something like the font that you use for the header, all of these are questions that
Oh,
require so much thinking. How you want to describe yourself or your book on your back cover. I mean, these are like, they can be days of thinking that goes
Oh,
into this.
those are all individual skills. The cover design is a skill, writing those blurbs, writing the, I mean, so you often, people often, I mean, if you have a publisher, they would handle that for you, but people hire people to do all those sort of, I mean, I could have hired a graphic designer to do design. I could have hired somebody to do. I just wanted to do it myself. I mean, I like doing that sort of thing, and
So now,
I like having the control of that,
in my next intro for you, I'll have to expand to say cover designer, layout specialist,
So, well, fortunately, there's a lot of good tools and there's a lot of information around, and I enjoyed doing the cover. I mean, the gal on the cover is not Hattie. That's Arthur, Hattie's husband. Okay. It's his sister's daughter, and
Sweet.
her name is Minnie. And that was one of the things that was in with my grandmother's diaries, was that picture of that young gal. And I just knew I had to, it's just a great picture,
Yeah, it's a great cover. I really like the cover and stuff.
Thank you.
So, you know what, when I think about being creative after 50, I'm just seeing gleaning all these things that you're offering us because or being ready to jump in, and just going, being able to go where you don't know what you're doing, and learn, because you blow me away with all the things that you've
Well,
had to learn.
one of the real important things I like to share with people is just you need to ask, not being afraid to ask for help, and asking for help for people you trust, and then when they offer their help, listening to it. I mean, I didn't do everything that somebody said, but if I asked one of my friends to read my manuscript and offer some feedback, I took that feedback seriously. It's like, okay, not to be afraid to ask for help, and not, and not, and I mean, this is not having to do with the book, but there's many instances where stuff I've done, like photography. I approached the Museum of Glass in Tacoma. I live next door. I have all these photos of the Museum of Glass. I don't know if you know what the Museum of Glass is in Tacoma.
I do.
Yeah, it's a beautiful
In
structure.
Tacoma, Washington, a beautiful museum has a lot of Chihuly glass and
I approached them. I said, "Hey, I've been taking photographs of this place. I'd love to have a show there." They said yes. I had this one man show at the museum,
amazing.
because I asked, but I was ready. I had the goods, so I mean, you got to be ready. You got to be, you got to have the goods. You got to be able to deliver. But not being afraid to ask. And that's the same with the World AIDS Day stuff that we've done, and my solo
Yeah.
show, I just asked people,
Well, yeah, you are a complete, incredibly inspiring role model for that. Do you, what's on your horizon? What, are you going to write another book? Or are you going to do another
I am going to
play?
write now.
What's the,
I
yeah.
am going to write another book. I did get approached about doing a play, turning Hattie's War into a play, and I would kind of like be interested in that. But I just, having done that before, I know how much work is involved with that, and I really want to be committed to doing it, if I was going to do it. And I would more like to do it as a movie. That's what I'd really like to do. I think it would be a great movie. But no, I'm gonna yeah, I'm gonna. I've got several book things that I'm real serious about. It's just my problem is I can't decide which one I want to do.
Oh my gosh.
Because I
Yeah.
mean, one is a nonfiction one. It's about, you want to hear about it?
Yeah, short form.
The working title is called Second Fiddle. And it's about men in particular, men putting their wives' careers basically ahead of theirs. That's kind of what I've, what happened in my family. My wife, has been the main bread earner, winner in our house forever. She was a lawyer and she was a judge, and but she was also instrumental in my doing what I've done. So it's a story. It's a book about, playing second fiddle.
I would read that book. It's a funny word, second fiddle, because you're not second fiddle, but in our culture,
Yeah, no, I no, I no, I you know, yes, I, yeah, I we made the decision to do, run our family. I was a stay-at-home dad for
Yeah,
13
for
years.
sure.
I've got, I had three kids. I mean, I had my, arms in up deep in diapers
Yeah,
all
you did
those
the
years.
work.
So
Yeah.
yeah, we're a team in that. So anyway, that's one of the things. The other one is a story of another family story. So one
Wow.
of my cousins was arrested for practicing medicine without a license. He was a orchid grower in the Finger Lakes region, and he developed something he thought was a cure for various ailments, and he just gave it away to people. And he was arrested eventually and tried in a trial, and they called him the Earth Doctor. I that's something else I found in my grandmother's stuff. One of her scrapbooks was newspaper clippings of the trial. This happened
Amazing.
in the 1960s. So
Yeah.
that's the other one. So anyway, then there's one other one, but I don't want to go on with that.
Can I deduce that creating like this and taking on projects gives you energy? Because you certainly need energy to be able to do them,
Yeah,
huh?
I've learned about myself that I have to stay engaged in something. And if I'm not engaged and I'm not creating whatever it might be,
Yeah.
that's not good for me. I mean, in Hattie's War, depression fall, is a big part of that whole story. And I wrote that from my own experience.
Really?
When I was a young adult, it was very difficult, particularly after the death of my brother, very difficult for me. And discovering that I was an artist, which I never realized until after I was 50, was a big real, revelation to me. And learning, knowing that I could do stuff that I never thought I could never do. I'll tell you a quick story about turning 50. When I turned 50, it was super traumatic. I'm 70, about to be 71. 70 was easy. 60 was easy. 50, I thought. I just had this clear vision that if I hadn't done what I thought I wanted to do in my life, I was never going to do it. If I, whatever it was, I want fantasize myself, all these hopes I had for myself. If I hadn't done it by 50, I wasn't going to do it. That was like a really clear, distressing sense of that. And of course, everything I've done that's remotely satisfying has happened after 50. It just clicked, and I give my wife a lot of credit for that, being super supportive of me and encouraging me to do various things. I also often say she saw the artist in me before I saw it in myself,
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. And
which is very true, very true.
I also think this is part of my own personal philosophy that when 50, you've done a lot of your growing up. And so you have a sense of perspective and an ability to take on things in a
Sure.
different way than you might have in your 30s when you had to prove
Right.
yourself or you worried what the world would think of you or whatever it was. 50, it's like,
Right.
I don't got that much time. let me do what's important and
Sure.
let's
Yeah,
go.
you're exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was 50 was rough, but the rest of it's been great. So no, like I said,
Well,
I have to stay engaged, and so as long as I'm
yeah.
working, if it's World AIDS Day stuff, that's engagement. If it's, other things, so.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question as an independent author, and also as a 70-year-old author. If, when we're in our 30s, the measures of success are often how much do we make and how many clicks do we get, how many, books do we sell, all these things that are pretty material. And and are worthy in their own way. What's your measure of success for Hattie's War?
Oh, that's a good one. If my measure is of success, well, one measure was that it was actually a good book. I had no idea. Like I said, I've never done this before. I had no idea that was this going to be any good. Would people enjoy it? And so the fact that people enjoy it and it's gotten good reviews, that's very gratifying. So I try to keep that in mind. I've sold some books. My main goal with the book was to get it into schools. That was my main goal. And Vashon Schools is the first. It's adopted as part of the 8th grade curriculum. So
Yay.
I went in last year and did a artist in residency, and I'll be going back again this year. And so they read it as part of
Fabulous.
the Civil War. In Winthrop, one of the English class in Winthrop, 7th grade English is
Winthrop,
reading it.
Washington. I'm just going to add a note for
Right.
people
Yeah. I'm
who are
sorry.
outside the
Yeah.
area. Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're reading it, and, one school district in Watkins Glen, which is kind of where this story is set. They've adopted it, for their English class. And so I'll be doing like a Zoom kind of thing with those students, soon. So, that was my goal, but I mean, that's a lot of work. That's just very, very hard. And so, if it happens, great. I'll do what I can to move it forward, but that's just a lot of work,
Yeah.
so I'm happy with what how
That's
it turned out.
fabulous, and then sometimes we have to go down to the personal measures where, there's going to be some girl who reads this book and sees herself
Oh yes, yeah. Well,
and is
yes,
changed by
absolutely.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in some respects, that's happened with Bridget, the young gal who was my beta reader in 6th grade. She kind of stuck with me, and she's just a really wonderful young woman. And then she read the book. She did the audio book for it, and it Hattie really clicked with her. She really identified with Hattie, and so
I'm
it's
sure
great.
she won't be the only one, because, and
Yes.
that's the kind of last question I have for you. Hattie, she's just memorable, and there she's sprightly, and she's courageous, and she's vulnerable, and she's artistic, and she has a sense of herself, even though she has a lot of questions about life and questions about herself. She's a kind of role model for a young woman. And especially at the time, which was,
Sure. Oh, yeah.
did you embellish that, or did you know that about Hattie, or did you just feel the kind of heroine you wanted to create and offer?
I know very little about Hattie, very little. I know that she got married when she was 21, which is actually quite old, and they had their first child a year later, and then the next child came when she was 13 years after that. So I just that seems a little. Little odd. That part seemed a little odd, but I don't really know anything. I know where they lived. I've been to their house, where the farm. It's still there. It's a winery now. They were grape farmers mostly. That's what my great grandparents were also. They lived in that house, and so I've been there and visited the house. I had this sense from since I knew my great grandmother and my her daughter, my mother's mother, Helen. I always sensed with my grandmother that she wanted something else with her life than the life that she ended up having. A really nice life. She's an upper middle class, housewife. But I just had this real sense that she wanted something else in her life. And I thought, I bet that my other grandmothers, deep down, maybe wanted something different than they were given. And after reading the diaries from my great grandmother, I realized that her life, early life, was not much different than Hattie's life. You know, they didn't have indoor plumbing. They had no indoor water. There was a cistern in the basement with a pump, and you know, they got around with horses. They plowed the field with, you know, horses. And so I wanted to give Hattie a voice that said, I want to be something other than a farmer's wife. That's what I want to do. And but she's caught in that, you know, as you see in the story. And at the end, she hops in the wagon with Arthur and says, you know, you drive, you know. So I don't know. Did you know
We don't know, but the fact that she was able to call herself an artist and she kept that dream and she found her way with it. You kind of say, in the story that you make up, because you don't know after the movie ends, what's going to happen, but you just see her staying close to her pencils somehow, because
Yes.
she
Oh,
has too
yes.
much spirit.
Yes. And but she struggles. And one of the kind of the sad parts of the story is Earl, her son, so my great grandfather, died at Willard Asylum. He died. It was called Willard State Hospital by that time. But he had dementia and was likely serious depression. So yeah, he died there. So that's how I kind of knew about Willard. I knew that there was a place like that around there, and so I began to, you know, kind of investigate that and what the history of that was, which is that's a whole
A
subject
whole
in and of
nother
us.
thing.
That's a whole other subject about, and the
Right.
plight of young women, I mean, of women during that era. You could be sent to an asylum for not a lot of good reasons. You didn't have to be mentally ill. If you were disobedient to your husband, you know, women had no, absolutely no rights, couldn't own property, couldn't have money
And
in their own
we had
name.
this medical diagnosis called hysteria,
Sure.
which was a diagnostic code that covered all sorts of normal
Sure.
conditions.
So I wanted to tell that part of the story too. I wanted to tell about, you know, depression and the fact that, you know, how it was dealt with back then. And
Wow.
so yeah, I cover I had I ended up covering a lot of different territory. A
Yeah,
lot of
yeah,
different
yeah.
themes, th a lot of themes in the book long of
Wow.
yeah.
Well,
So anyway, it's been a great adventure. So I'm very happy about it.
I would love to hear the lecture that you're going to give, or the talk, or the Q&A that you're going to do at Vashon High School, because I know it's going to captivate
Yeah,
the kids.
one of my secret weapons is I have some Civil War era bullets. They're called Minié balls. And so sometimes the boys aren't always quite engaged, and so I pull these bullets out, and I pass them around. They get to hold them and they look at them. You know, these lead bullets. And so that's one of my little tricks to keep the boys engaged. And so yeah, I have a whole kind of audio visual presentation. So I tell the story of how of going in high school, going to Gettysburg, finding out about Howell. So the same things I told you, I tell them. I tell how I created this. What, you know, there's an arc to this whole thing. Yeah.
Well, if listeners want to learn more, and I certainly hope they do, and it's a charming book, you can be found on petersurco.com, and I'll put how to spell that in the show notes so that people can find you. And you have lots of references to your book, as well as, some of the reviews and interviews that have been done with you. So any other ways to contact you that you want to let people know about, or?
Yeah, my website is the main one, and there's an audio book now that's available on Audible, and it's available on my website, and that's read by a girl who's Hattie's age,
Yeah, well, you're telling us about
Bridget.
it. Yeah, about
Yeah.
Bridget.
So it's and she does a really great job. I read the Uncle Byron letters, so that's what I did in the
So
book.
fabulous. That's
Yeah,
fabulous.
yeah,
Well,
yeah.
Peter, thank you so much for your time. We had a blast talking about World AIDS Day, and this has been so fun. Again, your commitment and your creativity seem so boundless that it's really a joy to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to talk with you. So thank you. I'd love to talk about the book. So any opportunity I have, I'd love to tell the story.
Okay, so I'll stop recording there. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon. and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.